Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? How's it?
Good morning.
Hello.
How are you guys?
Absolutely fine.
Two faces I haven't seen in a while.
We've been busy.
So busy.
Oh, I want to get into it. I want to hear all about it. I've also been lekker busy.
Good.
Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in to our lovely video store. We've got ourselves a Kolsky Matthews.
Hi.
Who is a creative...
Video copywriter, digital video copywriter.
Digital video copywriter.
Moonlighting bassist.
And a moonlighting bassist. We're not working at the video store. We've got ourselves a Samantha Nell.
How's it?
Who is a director and a writer whose debut feature film, Do Your Worst, is over on Netflix and is amazing.
Thank you.
And my name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And we get together once a week to catch up and talk a bit of shit. What are we going to chat about today? I want to get your opinion on Wicked for Good.
Okay, cool. You're going to get it.
Good. Samo, you haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it, but what I want to know is how much more excited I'm going to be to see it after this conversation.
Okay.
We'll see. I don't know how glowing my report is.
Interesting.
Okay.
But it's still positive.
Yeah.
Then I want to tell you guys about Eternity.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Which is a cool little, very imaginative rom-com that is playing at the Bioscope. And just a nice one for the Christmas season, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I saw House of Dynamite.
Also me.
Okay, cool. We can chat about that.
I watched the first four episodes of Stranger Things season 5.
Okay. Nice. Are you on the train?
I'm on the train.
I jumped off after season 1.
Okay.
With no disrespect.
No malice.
I absolutely loved season 1 when it came out. And then I quickly realized I can't stay on top of it all.
I made it to season 2, but yeah, I'm also on the
train. You guys missed Eddie.
Yeah.
That was like the best thing about Stranger Things was what's good old good looking
Joseph Quinn.
Joseph Quinn's.
That's the guitar. When
the Metallica song.
Metallica.
It's like, it was so cool. And Kate Bush. So iconic moments in season 4. You guys missed out on. Yeah.
And this is now the final season. Mm. This is season 5.
And we've got 4 episodes so far.
Okay. Lovely. Mm. What else, guys? What have you been enjoying?
I watched Begonia.
Okay, cool. We can chat about that. Yeah.
Begonia and Wicked for Good, I think, are my 2 new releases that I can talk about.
Okay, lovely. Samo?
House of Dynamite already mentioned. Cool. The Smashing Machine I finally watched, and Frankenstein.
Okay.
Oh, yeah,
Frankenstein. We gave Frankenstein a lot of love a little while ago, but I want to hear your take.
I'm here to do the opposite.
No.
It's your take.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's a good one or a bad one. I also really enjoyed a nice documentary with Chris Hemsworth.
Right.
Over on Disney Plus, which I want to chat about.
Is the documentary nice or is Chris Hemsworth nice?
Both.
Okay.
Those blue eyes. Whoever lit that documentary was just like, we need to get those eyes popping.
Okay.
And they successfully did it. But we always like to kick things off with a little round of, hey, did you guys see?
Mm.
A little entertainment news and hot goss.
Hot goss.
Who would like to kick it off?
I can kick it off.
Oh, okay.
So, have you guys heard about Zootopia's release?
Well, you got to say it, Cole.
Okay, sorry. Zootopia rules Thanksgiving.
You got to say it, Cole.
What?
Hey, did you guys see?
So sorry. Oh my God.
It's been a while.
It's like I haven't been here for like 3 years doing a podcast. Okay, hey, did you guys see? Zootopia 2 rules Thanksgiving with 156 million US opening and record smashing 556 million globally.
Yes.
So it's broken the record for the highest... biggest opening for an animated film globally. Mm. And then I also heard it's kicked ass in China.
250 million of that is China.
I heard it was... Oh, okay.
China's bigger.
Because what it did in China, you've very much taken one of my hey, did you guys see?
So, do it.
Which is fine.
Say it.
Which was this story of Zootopia. It's the fourth best opening weekend of all time.
That's insane.
So not just animated. All time.
Of all time.
Shit.
It's the fourth best.
Against Chinese films as well? Or fourth best Hollywood film opening in China?
No. Just in the world. Oh. In the world of cinema, it was the fourth best opening weekend of all time.
Jeepers.
But with the China thing, it was the first Hollywood movie to pass 100 million in a single day.
Mm. Jeez.
The only other Hollywood movie that had done that was Endgame.
Yeah, that tracks.
So it's interesting. And I think it shows you how much of that chunk is China. That's half, right?
Yeah.
If you said the total was about 200
It's 250 million in China. Yeah,
500.
Literally out of 500, yeah.
Jeepers. I wonder if it's got anything to do with Ki-hae Kwan's casting. Is he Chinese? Is he from Hong Kong?
He's from Hong Kong as far as I know.
Okay, so some people might find that
he moved around. He was like, he came from Vietnam.
Okay.
I think he was a refugee and he lived in like a camp.
Oh, wow.
As a kid. Oh, he's got a wild story.
Sorry, yeah.
No, I honestly think, I thought about this. I think my little ignorant stab is because it's animals. And the Chinese fucking love animals.
Yeah.
Their years and their calendars and their seasons and everything is ruled by animals.
Okay.
So I think that's got something to do with it.
Surely.
Has to be.
Mm.
You guys know.
There's also no gays in it, probably. So.
Yeah.
But you guys know the thing with like Hollywood films being released in China. Like, do you know sort of how the system works? And
it's
incredibly controlled. So like China produces, I think this was like 5 years ago, they produced something like 900 films a year, like for China, made by China, which is an incredible amount.
That's
of
astronomical.
Films. Yeah. That was a couple of years ago. And then what comes in from for foreign film is very, very limited. It's like 10 to 15 films a year get it released in China. Shit. So for Hollywood, it's very important to try and figure out ways to break into that market.
Yeah.
And it's why you see a lot of co-production. Like, you're like, oh yeah, there's like a whole section of this that's set in China, you know, because we're like, no, we're a Chinese film now. So for Zootopia to break through like that is insane.
Yeah. Someone who's in charge of like the Disney office in China, like, is getting a raise.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, they've done something right.
Right.
Very famously, the Ewan McGregor Winnie the Pooh film never got a release in China because there has been the connotations of how Xi Jinping, his face, looks a little bit like Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to stir that pot.
Yeah.
Okay. So just that strange coincidence will completely stop a film from being released.
And all that potential in that market. So you can tell to get into that market is the hugest fucking thing. Because
massive.
It's a massive market.
And the further controversy of the film Together, the Alison Brie Franco one, someone has now picked up how they edited one of the scenes for its China release where they took out the gays.
All right.
There was a little homosexual reference.
The best thing they did, well, not the best, it's just funny, is how The Force Awakens on the poster, they just took John Boyega off the poster.
They took out the black man.
Yeah. It's so nuts.
Imagine that, eh?
He was like, oh.
Just subtly, and it's not like he was a little sidekick. Like,
no.
He was the dude. He was the main guy.
Yeah.
Terrible.
That's so interesting.
But this happens, you know, this happens worldwide with marketing stuff. I remember Blue is the Warmest Color, the Cannes Palme d'Or winner from a couple of years ago, famously about a young lesbian relationship in France. I lived in Singapore at the time, a country where it is illegal to be gay. It got a release.
What?
It was 9 minutes shorter. I regret to this day not going to see the film in Singapore. Word.
Yeah, totally.
You know, but that kind of stuff is happening all the time. It's crazy.
Yeah.
That is very interesting. And I also, the kinds of movies I want to watch are the more interesting, experimental, or not explicit, but like just interesting movies. And when I'm on a plane, I want to watch them. And I know that the version I'm watching on a plane is vastly edited.
Mm.
Crazily edited. Mm. I was trying to watch that really interesting Nicolas Cage movie where everyone has the dream of him.
Mm.
Dream Scenario.
Yeah. And there was one or two cuts where I was like, this can't be real. Like, this can't be the decision of the filmmaker. Like, that scene just cut. And then I was like, oh, I'm on a plane.
Okay.
A little boy sitting next to me, you know, or a little kid, like, can't lean over and see what I'm sure, played out in that moment.
Yeah.
Now I need to watch I Saw the TV Glow Again, because I fucking loved that on the plane and I probably missed out on something cool.
Probably missed out on a lot.
You know? Okay.
Definitely watch it again.
Okay. Yeah, I fucking love that movie. Jesus.
But yeah, I think it's also has a little bit to do with timing with Zootropolis. Because
Zootopia?
Zootopia. That's also talk about changing in marketing. In some regions, it was called Zootopolis.
Oh, really?
And some countries were called Zootopia.
Okay.
I don't know why I gravitated to
It's like Harry Opolis. Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone vibe.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now for some people, Metropolis makes more sense than Utopia or...
Yeah. No, it's odd. Okay. I think it's also because Pixar just hasn't had a biggie in a while.
Mm.
Elio famously just came and fucking disappeared immediately.
Was it last year they had Inside Out 2?
I think it was last year. Or the year before,
yeah.
Inside Out 2, yeah. Inside Out 2 was last year.
Yeah. Well, so that means they've had two... Oh, no. Zootopia's Disney. It's not Pixar. I think it's just Disney.
It's the same house.
It's totally. It's Bob Iger.
It's the same, part of the world.
Sorry,
I mean,
to
it's
be
just
that
like,
guy.
No, but it's done on that huge
Zootopia
big
is actually Disney. It's not just Pixar.
Wild. Samo?
Hey, did you guys see that Quentin Tarantino has collaborated with Fortnite to bring the last chapter of Kill Bill into the game?
Oh, interesting.
Okay, I saw, this is weirdly serendipitous because I was watching a reel last night while doom scrolling, and there was a guy riding Beatrix Kiddo's yellow bike. Like on with the holding Beatrix Kiddo in Fortnite.
Speak a little bit of English there. What did you do?
I watched an Instagram reel.
Okay.
I was doom scrolling.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
I know what that means.
Okay. Then there was a character in Fortnite, a player, like hitching a ride with Beatrix Kiddo from Kill Bill on her yellow bike.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I didn't know Kill Bill was in Fortnite. So
which one is Beatrix Kiddo?
That's
it's Uma Thurman's.
Oh, is that her name?
Yeah.
Okay. In my head, she was like the bride.
I think she was for most of the two films.
I suppose it's a big plot point where you're like, what's her name?
Spoiler. Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
But it's a wild collaboration. And it's not the first collaboration with Fortnite we've seen this year. One battle after another also collaborated with Fortnite.
Shit.
Well, what does this mean?
So Tarantino has taken from the original... No, I'm not entirely sure.
I represent a lot of people here. What the fuck does this mean?
I'm not entirely sure I can explain it, but I'll do my best. So basically, obviously Fortnite is a game that the youth play.
Yeah. We know this.
We're going to start there. they came to Tarantino and he expected them to say like, hey, we want to license your super famous characters to be playable characters in our game.
Okay. Because so you the can kids choose like to that. Play as them.
Yeah. Okay, but cool. Instead, what they said to him is, hey, do you have a 9 to 15 minute kind of story that you would be interested in bringing to Fortnite as something playable? And he said, yeah, I've got this bit that I never shot of Kill Bill, which is about one of Lucy Liu's bodyguard's sisters trying to seek revenge on Uma Thurman's character.
Okay.
Cool.
And so instead they have brought that to the game, which I think is sort of fascinating.
So you wander around Fortnite, right?
It's an open world.
It's a MOBA.
What does that mean?
It's a massive online battle arena. It's one where you have like 100 players in a map and you have to whittle it down to one player as the map gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So you're like crunched into a space and you have to all kill each other.
And it's live with different people from around the world.
Yes.
So like you would enter into a game at any point in time?
Yeah.
Like they'll put you in a game.
No. You start the match together in a
MOBA. No. Sure. But I mean like if I logged in right now, it would be like you can join this one or just wait. Yeah. Hold on one second. Yeah. Okay, now you can join this one.
Yes, 100%.
So okay. the question of how does this narrative actually work in that context is where I lose my ability to explain to you what is happening.
Okay.
But what I think, the point that I wanted to bring is, it's sort of fascinating that both, you know, Tarantino, who is obviously very committed to cinema in general, and then Paul Thomas Anderson have done collaborations with Fortnite this year.
It's very interesting.
And I think, you know, just from an outsider's perspective, I think they are trying to reach a younger audience in a big way.
Yeah.
And this is the way that we're starting to see people do it.
I mean, it's cool that their pride doesn't get ahead of an effort like this, right?
Yeah.
Because also, do you guys remember Matrix Reloaded, Matrix Revolutions?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys ever play Into the Matrix?
No.
No.
So Into the Matrix was a companion multi-platform storytelling game.
Mm.
to Matrix, I think it was Revolutions, and you played Jada Pinkett Smith's character and her co-pilots. Oh man, I used to know what all the ships were called. Fuck.
Like Morpheus,
Morpheus on the Nebuchadnezzar.
They were all like Christian,
biblical names biblical and stuff. Names. Yeah, but there was an entire subplot where they had to do a mission in Matrix Revolutions that you never saw. They had to do something in order for the main plot line to succeed.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in the game, you go play that plot line, and it was so cool to like. And then they also shot a whole bunch of scenes that you can only see in the game.
Lovely
with those characters. So multi-platform storytelling is so cool but when it's done right.
But there's obvious answers. The one is, I'm sure they paid money.
Yeah, lots.
And the other thing is, you forget what the word cult is short for.
Yeah.
It is short for the word culture. There is culture around your product, be it merch, in jokes, games, you know, other subsidiary things that live outside of your product. Mm. So the moment a whole bunch of kids see Kill Bill characters in their favorite game, it builds the culture of Kill Bill. It builds the cult status of it.
You know, and
so it's just such a no-brainer.
And I think this also, it also speaks to, I mean, we saw it earlier this year with the success of the Minecraft movie. You know, it's not, don't play Minecraft, but like that was a film I went, that'll come and go. You know, it was massive.
Mm.
It was massive in a way I couldn't fathom because it is part of a sort of whole kind of cultural.
And there's just a whole bunch of in-jokes. What underpinned it was the chicken jockey joke and the moment which spurred kids to lose their minds.
Mm.
It's the same as little kids today going 6'7". It's
8'9".
It's their joke. Yeah. It doesn't matter what it came from. It doesn't even matter what it represents.
Oh, no. It's their thing.
It's the fact that it's theirs and they can hold on to it and have some identity through it.
Mm.
So this was basically a story to just tell you that I've realized that I'm old and I no longer have access to youth culture.
It happens.
Well done.
Thank you.
It happens in one or two clicks. And they like three or four little switches go off like one by one until you're like, I'm old.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it for a long time. And it comes in these weird little moments. And in the next few weeks, in our December holidays, it's my turn to... Well, it's the turn to go with my family between myself and my wife. Every Christmas, it's either my family or her family for Christmas. And this year, it's my family. And my folks always go to Cathedral Peak Hotel in the Drakensberg. It's like Dirty Dancing kind of lodge. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Big family dining rooms where you all eat. There's a golf course. That's why we're going
and
to that one.
There's definitely actual Dirty Dancing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I hope to sort of wander up to the staff quarters and dance with a hot gentleman. I my whole life was always the youth or on the youth side of that dining hall.
Okay,
until like I think it was last year where you sort of looked out and were like, ooh. Oh, I'm at the grown-ups table. Yeah. Like I'm in the grown-up section.
Yeah.
Damn, dude.
That was one of the like the final clicks where I was like, I'm old. Like I'm older.
Yeah.
Like it's just you just give in and just accept it. The first switch was when I had to go and get my teeth checked out from a dentist, and the dentist who walked in was younger than me.
Damn, dude.
And that was the first time that had ever happened in my life. They were always older figures.
Mm.
And here was this dude where I was like, where's the dentist? And he's like, I'm the dentist. And
yeah,
you're like,
dude. Fuck.
You are a fucking child. And that's when you're like, no, I'm just that much older that a fully qualified, very competent person could be a dentist and be younger than me.
Yes.
Actually, the very first one, all around about the same time, was when you crossed over the age of Kurt Cobain. And you're like, he was a child.
He was so fucking young.
He was a child.
Absolutely.
Because when you're a little kid in standard four, standard five, playing guitar for the first time, starting your first band, you're like, he was married. He had a kid.
Yeah.
He had a house.
Yeah.
That he killed himself in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like that was his house.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what grown-ups have. And you're like, no, he was a child.
Yeah.
He was a child.
Yeah.
Anyways. Okay, my turn. Hey, did you guys see The Mayor in Pluribus? Have you seen Pluribus?
I'm watching it.
Okay. You know the scene where she's like, "You're the mayor." Have you gone to that?
I haven't gone to that episode yet. No.
Okay. So let me finish the statement. Hey, did you guys see The Mayor in Pluribus is the actual mayor of Albuquerque in real life?
Okay.
Yeah, it's delightful.
That's cool.
And it is a smart little cameo because this dude actually is up for re-election. And so it kind of gives him a little bit of popular vote. But for those who don't know, Pluribus is the big show over on Apple TV Plus. I think it's one of the most exciting, most unique. Graham and loves his big bold swings. This is a big bold swing, and it's really hard to kind of explain it in one quick go, but basically the whole world becomes connected where all humans are able to kind of be connected to one another.
And it's like a
singular consciousness except for a select group of people, one of which is our main character, who is normal while everyone else is in this kind of weird, synced, world-changing event. And all the other humans work together. There's no such thing as hierarchy anymore. Everyone is one. Everybody knows all the information. Everybody knows all the skill sets, the history, the personal details of everyone. And so there's a scene where a whole bunch of people are cleaning her house and she identifies one of them as the mayor of her city, of her town.
Amazing.
And she's like, "Aren't you the mayor?" And that guy is the actual mayor. Albuquerque. Yeah.
Delightful.
So yeah, I thought that was a nice fact. I also think it's fun to always think about the politics of this kind of move, you know, especially when someone is in a campaign, whether it's to get an Oscar or to be reelected or to do certain things. You put yourself in these things of popular culture.
It could be taken one of two ways. It could be like really fucking cool that my mayor's in a series,
yeah,
or it could be really contrived and people are like, "Oh, that's so obvious what they're trying to do," or yeah, like some kind of skeptic.
Or it's like, shouldn't you be like doing mayor stuff?
Yeah. What are you doing? No, but it's a quick set. I mean, it was a quick scene. It could have been a morning in his life. But yeah, I thought that was a fun fact.
Yeah,
Kolsky,
I got one more. It's another box office related thing.
Cool.
So a film called Kokuho, becomes Japan's top grossing live action film ever.
Oh.
So it's always interesting when that kind of thing happens because you're like, "Oh, what is this? What is it about this movie that makes it so popular?" So it's directed by a Korean Japanese born individual named Lee Sung Il.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 3-hour period drama about the cloistered world of traditional kabuki theater.
Sure.
Mm.
Highest grossing Japanese film of all time.
Well, I don't know if it's a Japanese film. Well,
but I mean,
yeah.
Highest grossing film in Japan.
Yeah.
But exactly. It sounds like a slow, thoughtful. Have you seen kabuki theater? It's like really slow and quiet.
I actually fell asleep in actual kabuki theater in Japan.
No ways.
Because it was like busy holiday and then this slow as fuck theater happened and it literally lulled me to sleep.
Yeah, I'm like what? I need to watch it to be like, what is, like, why is this drawn as a box office film?
Right.
Because it sounds like Name of the Roses, you know?
Yeah, like, totally.
I love the fact that these records are happening now.
Yeah.
Like this last weekend.
Oh, 100%. Where people... Oh, what? Are you talking about Thanksgiving or in general?
Just in general.
Mm.
Yeah, okay. Obviously, sorry. Also, another aspect of Zootropolis. Zootopia.
This is Zootopia.
is, at least for America, was the Thanksgiving timing.
Mm.
There wasn't other major releases on this weekend. I wanted to just let you guys know. I thought you'd be... It's in the spirit of what we're talking about. Hey, did you guys know? Friday was the most successful till turnover the Bioscope's ever had.
What?
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so I just love, and it was just in the spirit of what we're talking about now, is that as much as people, you know, are worried and are skeptical about the economics of cinema, you have a movie like Zootopia going like, "We're fine, don't worry. If it's a good movie,
yes,
and it's well-timed, and it's well-advertised,
yes,
and if China gives a shit,
yep,
the economy is there, folks.
Mm.
People are still going to make a bucket ton of money."
Mm.
And so I just also love, and I said it to our staff, that like, guys, with no fuss, and no Black Friday sale, just good events, good work, hard work. We managed to do that.
Which that is great. Amazing, dude.
This excludes the ticket sales of the day. This excludes what one or two events paid in venue hire. This is just from the popcorn, the pizza.
Stationery stand.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Cole's mom's brownies.
Hell yeah. Our friend Bridget's lollipops.
Hey.
Gad's rock candy. No, it was just a series of really great events. One of which was a significant corporate. Those usually do well for us, but this was a combination of that amongst other things. There were these guys that are in the film industry that started this like film night, a collection of short films. They're calling themselves Short Film Sundays, even though this didn't happen on a Sunday. I've told the guy he should perhaps rethink the name. but it was just well coordinated and well done. And I just was just so stoked that I'm not looking back on previous years going, hey, you know, let's try and beat that.
Yes.
It's like the record is now. Yeah. It's like it was Friday.
That's amazing.
Which is great. You'd appreciate what once held the record for many years as the most money we ever made at the till. Mubuneng and the organizers and the people behind Mubuneng tried to sort of always be breaking the mold, doing things differently, trying to be the sort of agitators and the upsetters in that sense. And they were happy to have, they were called the Dacha couple. Do you remember the Dacha couple?
They were involved in legalizing Dacha. Right?
Yeah, they were a couple, two older sort of hippies, but they were smart in terms of legislation and what kind of bureaucratic steps need to take to, like they what is it, the term? They walked so that we could run.
Yes.
Now that so much of the legislation has changed around Dacha and marijuana, it very much helped because of the work that these folks did. And there was this kind of meetup, this like smoke-up event, this 420 kind of inspired thing that happened one day, one Saturday in Mubuneng, just on the streets of Mubuneng. And of course, you can't go and get a liquor license for a bar outside in the street because you could never have kind of said what this event was. And so there wasn't anyone like fully equipped to be a bar. And so everyone had this like smoke up. I just remember the lines around the corner at the Bioscope till eventually like staff going like, we got Vintook Light. Do you remember those beers? Just like, we'll sell you anything.
Yeah.
And we just cleaned out our bar. And like that was actually the record holder for so
that
long.
That is amazing.
Like we'd never ever beat that day's turnover.
I love this.
Until Friday.
Amazing.
No, they were one or two, I think, that maybe got close to that over the years. Like when we hosted the Rugby World Cup final in the courtyard, all of us put up screens, and that was quite a nice day. But yeah, it's just lovely.
That's a good one.
Okay, should we move on? Or are there more?
I got one more.
You got one more? Yeah. Go for it.
It's just a gentle shout out. It's a, hey, did you guys see? There's a trailer for Gus Van Sant's new movie, Dead Man's Wire. This was at Venice earlier this year. This is Gus Van Sant, who made wonderful films like Good Will Hunting, Elephant, now I've forgotten a bunch of stuff, even Cowgirls Get the Blues, My Own Private Idaho. He is amazing.
Milk?
That's okay, the other one
I was wondering
forgetting.
If I was wrong.
No, you were 100% right. But it's his first film since 2018. And yeah, it's got Al Pacino in it. It's got Bill Skarsgård in it. It is sort of a historical crime film. But just in general, I hope we get it released, or hope we find a way to see it. Go watch the trailer. It just
lovely. What's it called?
It's called Dead Man's Wire.
Okay.
It's the story of a murderer / kidnapper.
I did see a trailer for it.
Yeah. But yeah, I think
is it based on a true story?
It's based on a true story.
Yeah, the Dead Man's Wire is like when you've rigged a rifle. So that, or hand grenade or something, like if you let it go,
okay,
you've like jimmied it in such a way that if you move, it'll go off.
Yes.
It's like it's like a trigger.
Mm. Okay. So you're on the precipice of something exploding or.
Yeah, it almost feels like it could be like a Dog Day Afternoon, like sort of set over the course of this incident where this guy like takes a hostage.
Yeah, but what just like knowing Gus Van Sant's work, it will be incredibly human, it will be gentle, but it will also have these like very intense kind of like themes and explorations.
Yeah, he also did an interesting film. It certainly wasn't my favorite Gus Van Sant by any means, but it was a look at the last few days of Kurt, or the last few hours of Kurt Cobain's life.
Yes,
it's called Last Days, I think.
Yes,
it was called Last Days.
Okay. Yeah, Milk was 100% a gay awakening movie for me.
Och, no man.
Och, no man.
That's where that comes from.
No.
It comes from
Milk.
Well, have you heard the Och, no man story?
No.
Daryl, the guy I started the Bioscope with, said he was in the cinema. This is back in the day. This just shows you how cinema was such a big part of popular culture, where you would go and watch a movie just because it was like, it's a Friday night, let's go to the movies. And we'll have a look at the options and we'll choose it. Like, that doesn't happen anymore.
Mm-mm.
Like, if you are going to the movies, you know which movie you are going to.
Yeah.
And so this couple in front of him was busy watching Milk, you know, thinking, oh, I know Sean Penn, that this could be cool.
Yeah.
And when apparently the first kissing happened, Daryl heard an audible, "Och, no man." And we just thought, like, that is such a funny representation of the mainstream's, you know, perception of queerness.
Yes, Och, exactly. No man.
The same thing happened when I went to see Moonlight. I had people walk out. I was like, what did you think you were coming to see?
Oh, this is when gays throw their lifestyles in our face. It's those people that are like, oh, they're in movies now.
All right. Should we move on?
Yeah.
Let's play two rounds. Or let's do, it's a best of three.
Okay.
This is our little game here called What Movie Am I? It's a delightful little game that we have in stock here at the Bioscope. And I just think it works really well for our podcast. I'm going to give you some prompts, and you've got to tell me what movie I am talking about.
Do we go one by one or at the same time?
No, no. The rules are very similar to how we do our Video Store Presents, which is the moment you think you know what the movie is, you have to shout, "Oh, Captain, my Captain."
Yeah.
Okay. That's the way we do the quizzes before our...
Vibes.
Video Store Presents. I've got to... These are the first time I've seen these cards.
I think Sam's going to crush me in this.
I think you're going to crush me.
Let's see.
I have such performance anxiety.
Because you're like, I'm a movie person. I know things. Now I have to
I've
perform.
Seen some of them.
And some of these prompts are fucking so obvious and give it away. So I've got to sort of almost read it ahead of time and make sure not to say that one.
Okay.
So that you don't... so that it's not too obvious. Okay. I am a comedy. I am inspired by a parenting book. I was adapted into a Broadway musical. Oh, no, these other two are too obvious. My plot focuses on navigating high school cliques.
Mm. Oh, Captain, my Captain. It's Mean Girls.
Yeah.
Oh, well done. Well done.
Okay. I am a black and white comedy. Many of my scenes were shot in Coronado, California.
Uh-huh.
Fuck knows how that could help you. My main characters dress in drag.
Captain,
I didn't say it properly.
It is Some Like It Hot.
Yeah, yeah. Got it.
Okay, but I feel like Cole, you did.
I was like panicked.
You panicked, said it first.
Okay, cool. Sorry.
Love that movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Yeah, my final line is, well, nobody's perfect.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so now it's one each.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so this is the divider. I am an A24 production.
Uh-huh. Like,
I am based on a semi-autobiographical play. Oh, I share the story of a queer black protagonist.
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Yeah.
It's Moonlight.
Yeah, that's what we were just talking about.
About it.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
I was going to say The Whale for the second clue, because wasn't that a play?
It was also a play, yeah. But Moonlight was also an autobiographical play.
And my protagonist is played by three different actors.
Okay, that's a giveaway. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay,
nice.
That's a good game.
That's a very good game.
It's a fun game.
And also they have A24 mentions and like
it's cool.
Mean Girls. It's like cool.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into it. Let's talk about Wicked for Good.
Ooh, Wicked for Good.
Okay. So, Kolski, you and I sat together in a dimly lit Monte Cassino cinema privé to watch the original.
Oh, God,
first
in that
one.
Terrible cinema.
That's when honestly, that is when I realized I needed to upgrade the lamp of the bioscope. It prompted me to do that.
Because I remember, so a whole bunch of people come, you know, you're the film person to a lot of friends, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they come up to you after the movie and they're like, oh, why was it so dark? And it was terrible because it was so dark that you couldn't see anything. Like,
yeah,
it was completely neutral. So it's like no difference between like lights and darks, and it just felt completely flat and undiscernible.
Yeah.
It's like illegible.
A dim lamp in a projection in a cinema almost feels like when someone's kind of opened the door.
Yeah.
You know, and you just don't have the crispness of it. That's kind of what it feels like.
I feel like we must take a moment to just be like, come to the bioscope and the lamp is great now.
Well, thank you, because there was this point where I was like, oh, this is the most expensive light bulb I've ever paid for in my life. But I was like, I just thankfully have one.
It is worth every penny.
I just have one cinema. I should get it right.
Yeah.
And so that brought a whole mess of things, which I'm grateful to be on the other side of, which is like this brighter bulb meant all of a sudden our little setup was overheating, and that involved getting air cons and extractors and all sorts of things.
Dude.
So it did bring this little world of pain, but I'm grateful for it because we've come out of it the other side with a really great picture here.
The picture is incredible.
But we were introduced to the world of Oz, this kind of big world building part one. We both defied gravity as we cried a little at the end. What did you think of part two?
You know what I really missed about part two was being in a cinema full of theater kids.
Yeah,
that was something special.
Yeah, because they were all there for that premiere.
Yeah.
And it was so funny. Like,
I gave you guys tickets to that. I couldn't make it because of my parenting things. You guys couldn't make it either.
But the best thing was like when Popular started, you heard like five gays around the audience go, ah!
That's so funny.
So I missed that. And Wicked for Good. So, for context, I didn't really enjoy, because I think Steven Spielberg's West Side Story's ruined movie musicals for me, because I don't think anything can marry cinema and stage.
Yeah.
Like West Side Story
did.
That's
an incredible movie.
Like,
are you saying part one you didn't enjoy?
So part one I didn't enjoy because I felt like it was very functional shooting. It's like, okay, cool, there's a wide. Yeah. And then we've got a long lens on detailed close-ups of choreo.
Mm-hmm.
So then what happens is you're not letting the choreo do its work.
Ooh.
Right, and you're not blocking the camera with the choreo because you're also obsessed with these practical sets that you've made that you have to show big crane shots of.
Yeah.
And I felt like it wasn't very well staged in terms of it was just a gripe of mine, basically. I just, throughout the whole movie, I sat there. And then also it's got very cosmetic lighting, which a lot of films are doing lately. It's like very flat.
It's so upsetting.
Yeah.
It's the fix it in post lighting.
Did you see the Devil Wears 2
part
of 2 trailer? It's just like completely flat lighting. Yeah. So this is happening often. So that kind of irked me.
Okay.
And I mean, like, story logic problems aside.
Okay, no, but that's the movie of last year.
Yes.
Let's talk
so
about
So I was worried
this.
The same things were going to happen in this. Mm. Okay. And I was really surprised to see that I think in terms of its camera work, in terms of its like mise-en-scene, it's far more constructed and deliberate and thought out.
Yeah.
So I was enjoying myself a lot more. It was visually fantastic. Act one does have a lot of the bangers.
Oh, yeah. Like, here's like one good one in act two.
Exactly.
Oh. I was about to say, Sam, have you seen the play?
I've seen the play.
Okay,
cool.
So that's important.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can be that person, because you say you haven't seen...
I haven't seen the movie.
Haven't seen
I've
the
definitely
movie.
Seen the play.
But you can see the play, because at this point, I think it's maybe worth mentioning, part two of the play is famously not as good as part one. And like the world kind of knows that.
Yeah.
And I think it's so interesting that you actually have this blueprint, you know, John Chu and everyone involved. They have a blueprint. They know what works. And for the most part, you've got this tried and tested, lovable story.
Yeah.
But you also have famously the idea that the second half isn't as good.
Yeah.
Well, so
it's because you can't top Defying Gravity.
Yeah.
It's an impeccable song.
And that's the curtain closer of
the first movie the first act.
Yeah.
And then famously it's just kind of almost functional, the second act of Wicked.
Mm. Yes. It's kind of like we have to tell the rest of the story. We have to tie it into the Wizard
of Oz. I found it very, small set, close-ups, lots of nuance, lots of how we're looking at each other, what we are misconstruing, quite sort of nuanced and bureaucratic, and it wasn't this big spectacle.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I felt sad at the fact that later on in the day, I saw it in the morning, later on in the day, I actually had forgotten I'd watched it. And I was like, oh, no. Yeah. I was a little sad. Mm. But I was like, actually, you've kind of forgotten how it ended.
I think, like,
because I really wish, you know, and you kind of, and I actually ignorantly thought, well, I'm sure in the musical they come on and do Defying Gravity one more time.
Nope.
They don't. Mm-mm. No, interesting. Mm. So you actually have this dull third of a second half.
Yeah.
And you should have perhaps changed it.
Yeah, that's true. You don't walk away from it thinking of like a lot
should
of big
have done
numbers.
Something knowing that, but of course then you would have pissed off all the theater people. But yeah, if we can all collectively agree the second half of the play isn't as strong as the first half, then you can maybe go, well, for the sake of a film, we need to do whatever.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, they bring it in terms of performances like they did in the first. I'm sure they
are both fabulous.
Cynthia Erivo and Ariana, they are amazing, amazing actors.
Mm.
And they really sell it. So, like, I did almost shed a tear, which I was worried about because I was wearing makeup. The guy that I went with was like, we got to dress up for Wicked. So,
oh, cool. What did you do?
So it was just like, wore a little bit of white highlights on either side of the eye.
Okay.
So that it could bring out the pink and the green respectively. So he went green, I went pink, and then there was glitter.
Oh, nice.
So it was just like around the eye with a little bit of glitter and stuff.
And this was just a random screening?
No, this was just a random screening we went to. It wasn't anything special.
Lovely.
But it's like, we have to dress up for Wicked. And I was like, okay,
cool.
I love an excuse to wear makeup. So
yeah.
Absolutely, like, almost shed a tear at the end, and I was like really stressing about it. But the favorite, the best thing I've been seeing online is that you walk out of that theater a lot of time going, but oh no, how does that work? Why did that person do this? Like, this doesn't make a lot of sense. Mm. The tie-ins to Wizard of Oz are really clumsy.
Yeah.
And everyone hates the Cowardly Lion now. Everyone hates him. It's like everyone loathes this character because he interrupted Elphaba's one number.
Yeah.
And she was going to hit a high note, and then he interrupted. And then also, like, the perspective and the empathy of that character are just completely not considered at all. Mm-hmm. So you look at this guy going, you fucking suck, bro. Like, you're a little cowardly bitch. You know?
But I loved how The Wizard of Oz and those characters were weaved into the story of Wicked.
Mm.
And I'd imagine they do it even better in the stage play. Not really.
It also feels, that's what I mean by functional. It's like, oh, we've got to shoehorn this in here. I mean, it'd be interesting to know if it works better in the novel.
Yeah, I'm very curious to know that, because the whole thing is that you have to watch Wizard of Oz to understand what's going on in Wicked for Good.
Yeah.
Because they don't show anything of Dorothy's, like, journey, basically.
No, sure, and you don't even see her face.
Yeah, you don't even see her face. So you have to go in with that kind of media literacy. If you don't have it,
sure,
you're going to be like, what the fuck's going on?
The understanding is that we all do.
Mm.
We all do know The Wizard of Oz.
I kind of wish that they'd taken the opportunity to kind of not remake The Wizard of Oz, but just, like, integrate it a little bit more.
Or re-release it.
Oh, re-release
The Wizard of Oz. I want to watch it on the big screen again.
We did it as a classic movie Sundays,
which
nice.
Is cool.
Yeah.
They have famously done it at the Sphere in a very cool way.
Yeah, I saw some of that.
Which looked amazing. I wish we all could have, you know, just had Vegas in our back pocket to go and watch that. But that looked really special. But on this little Wizard of Oz note, hey, did you guys see, little back call to our hey, did you guys see round, that Ted Lasso, the writers have revealed how Wizard of Oz was an inspiration for the show Ted Lasso.
Yeah, it's like a whole bunch of the characters are based on Wizard of Oz characters.
And it almost, the little video about it has you think, you know, this is just a little fan theory, but they're like, no, Brett Goldstein has said X, Y, and Z, like, this is this, I see this is this.
Yes.
This person is Dorothy. And it was a little fun thing, and they've left these little breadcrumbs as
it's like when he's building Lego with his sons, there's a single yellow brick.
Yeah.
And in the pub, there's a Wizard of Oz pinball machine.
Yeah.
Like, a whole bunch of different cues to it. It's really beautiful.
Easter eggs.
Yeah.
What was the actual story? There's a fun fact as to how the term Easter egg came about.
No, don't know it.
You don't know it.
No.
We'll save this for next week.
I'm gonna double check it, but it was something that happened where they did hide a whole bunch of Easter eggs for some reason, and then the characters or the TV show or the people involved didn't collect all the Easter eggs, and so people actually spotted literal Easter eggs in the frame of.
Please be Passion of the Christ.
Something along those lines, and so people like still were looking and found Easter eggs that were hidden like under the couch or under the table.
Oh, interesting. Okay,
exactly what it was.
Yeah.
So Sammo, we have something called Spoiler Alley.
Okay.
And it's, you know, we're in our video store here, standing behind the counter talking, but at the end of the shift, so at the end of this episode. Mm. We go and vape or smoke. What are you doing? You're vaping these days?
No, I'm smoking again.
You're smoking cigarettes again?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, sorry, dude.
How did you go back to cigarettes?
It's a wild ride, man.
Okay.
It's a long story.
But we go into the alley behind the video store.
Yeah.
And that is where we can talk about things like, I want to talk about Wicked for Good.
Yeah.
But where spoilers fly.
Yeah, so everyone can tune out.
Because there's one or two little
pop. They're going to watch it.
Plot points that I really want to chat to you guys about.
Yes,
you know, having seen the movie and the musical, or knowing the play, where it's like, what?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. There will be the film's biggest problem.
Yeah, so let's go. We'll go and have a vape or have a smoke after this, and we can talk about that.
Okay.
Let's talk about House of Dynamite. Can we?
Yeah, we can.
All right. Have you seen it?
No, I don't even know what it is.
Catherine Bigelow's new movie on Netflix.
Yes, I remember this.
And it stars
Idris Elba, Ferguson.
Ferguson.
Yeah.
Rebecca Ferguson.
The mother in Dune.
Yes.
I knew it was wrong when I said it. I was like, something's wrong.
And what it is a lovely day in the life of all the entities in the American security forces that monitor the skies every day.
Mm.
So like a situation room, you know, the kind of outpost of the military.
Anti-missile people.
Yeah. Where it should be a normal day. Then it is a somewhat of a special day in that they've noticed something in the sky. And then, Cole, over the course of this movie, it escalates as we realize a nuclear missile is bound for Chicago.
Yep.
Fuck.
And so it is this kind of real-time 20 minutes sort of told in sort of three different ways, three different perspectives as we see this all play out, where what starts as very normal becomes a little more heightened, but still optimistic that it can be solved, to sort of sheer panic and what do we do?
Mm.
Idris Elba plays very much a Barack Obama-esque president.
Yeah.
Rebecca Ferguson is one of the main people in the...
She's like the commander of the situation room,
basically. Yeah. Also, we should talk about this, I guess, in the spoiler alley, because it makes some big decisions.
Yeah.
What did you think of it? I must say, I struggled because of the end.
I also struggled because of the end, but I also found myself... I'm a huge Catherine Bigelow fan. I think The Hurt Locker is extraordinary. It's a great piece of filmmaking, and you're on tenterhooks the whole way through. And so when I heard Catherine Bigelow is going to do a nuclear warhead movie, I went, that's going to be a good time. It's not going to be a chuckle fest, but it's going to be... You know, you're going to be tense. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be all those things.
Yeah.
I found myself reaching for my phone.
Oh, no.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I can only really talk about why when we get to the spoiler section.
Yeah. It is hard to talk about without giving too much away.
Mm.
So I think I've laid the foundation.
Yeah.
And I think that must be the topic of the second cigarette.
100%.
Can I then tell you guys about Eternity?
Yes, please. Yes.
One of the most imaginative and interesting, fun romantic comedies that get made in 2025. I think that number one is the most interesting thing, which is, how do we make it a romantic comedy in 2025?
Yeah.
This is cool because The Materialists came out this year.
Yeah.
And The Threesome. And I thoroughly enjoyed The Threesome.
Yeah. Amazing. No, all really of these like are in the same world, yeah. which yeah. is like, it's almost like we're focusing on what happens before, what happens after the typical romantic comedy.
Yeah.
So instead of Richard Gere just sort of arriving with the flowers and the movie ending and everyone feeling happy, it's like what happens afterwards. So Eternity is all about a old couple mm-hmm. that have lived together for 50 odd years. And the husband dies.
Okay.
But as he dies, he wakes up as a younger version of himself on a train and arrives in a station and finds himself in what can only be described as like a big airport waiting room / conference where this is the afterlife. And he has an afterlife coordinator.
Yeah.
And he has to ultimately pick his eternity. So you arrive as your most happiest self. So for many, that's like in your 20s or younger or whatever.
Yeah.
And so this is a young Miles Teller. And he has to pick where he wants to spend his life. And it looks like a giant convention. If you want to be in cowboy land, you can pick that eternity. If you wanted to just be in Vegas, or if you just wanted to be in a strip club, or if you just wanted to be in the mountains, or if you wanted to be by the beach, and they're all selling their eternities to people. So you can go to this convention and try out all of these things. His wife, just before he died, like his wife, you understand, was terminally ill with cancer. So he knows she's going to be coming soon. Yeah. She will join him soon.
Yeah.
Because he immediately is like, where is she? What's happening? How the fuck does this all work? And they say, well, when she dies, she'll arrive and you'll see her. So you should wait, I guess, so that you
like can wait in the lobby.
So you could
her.
Wait so that you could pick this eternity together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the number one rule of this fantasy story is that once you've picked that eternity, you can't change it.
Yeah.
You can't leave that eternity.
That's a decision,
that's,
yeah.
That's the rule of this story. And she does eventually pass away and they meet in the lobby. But pretty much as they meet, someone else joins who is her first husband who died when he went to war. He died in the Korean War.
Yeah.
And he has been waiting for the same amount of time as their marriage, pretty much.
Woof.
For her.
That's amazing.
Okay, so like a young Shit. Elizabeth Olsen arrives and meets a young Miles Teller, sort of roughly, you know, the same age as when they met
yeah.
before their 50 years of marriage. And here comes the guy that, you know, she was married to, that she did love,
yeah.
who died prematurely. So she's basically, the movie is about her picking between the love that she knows, even if it is the sort of grumpy love, you know, of like,
yes.
I know all your quirks, but I still tolerate you.
Yeah.
Versus the love that could have been, which was this.
Oh, hectic.
That sounds great.
Know, that is love. Awesome.
It's great.
That is a good premise.
Yeah. It is good. And it's like, it's got lots of little twists and moments and turns, and it ultimately, you know, gets to a place that, it's gooey. But it's just cool. Maybe someone's one criticism down the line could be like, maybe it's too soppy. But I didn't think so. I thought it was a lovely balance. It's imaginative. You literally are, in one or two instances, going into these worlds. So you get to kind of go into these different eternities. And it ends in a almost Gondrian sense as you sort of break apart this afterworld and That's they travel amazing. Through it. And oh, it's lovely. But to me, what's cool is that in 2025, we are getting into the weeds of what love is.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like, what actually is love?
Mm.
And what is true love? And what is, you know, it's so much past Richard Gere on the stairs giving you the rose. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's just, it's so much, we've evolved so much further than that classic one. It's the love of 50 years of marriage, mm. you know, or the love of what could have been. And oh.
It sounds like an effervescent version of Past Lives.
Mm.
Because that was like also dealing with a similar problem.
Yeah.
Very much so. Very much so. The same world done in two very different ways. And what I love is that what we are constantly thinking about at the Bioscope is this a cinema movie?
Yeah.
And I think Eternity is a cinema movie because it actually is done on quite a big scale. You're in this huge convention. You know, you got to stay in these rooms, you know, while you are, you got a certain amount of time to pick your Eternity. Yeah. If you don't pick it, then you sort of go down into the basement while you wait, if you're choosing to wait. Yeah. Where a movie like The Threesome was actually quite a nice, like, couch movie.
It's
a smaller, more indie film. It's very much in your, it's very much set in a home. Yeah. So that makes you kind of want to watch it and enjoy it in a home. Past Lives was very much a cinema movie, I think.
Yeah.
But it was also just a small, intimate little story. But Eternity is on just a that much bigger of a scale. But it's A24, so it's cool. Like, it's done in a cool way. It's done smartly. It's got a visual appeal. Oh, I loved it. I thought it was really great. Callum Turner is the first husband.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Olsen is the main woman. Miles Teller.
Watch anything she's in. Elizabeth Olsen has fantastic taste.
Yeah.
In what she chooses to be in.
Mm-hmm.
I also enjoy the Avengers movie, but I'm X-ing them from this.
Yeah.
If she's doing something independent, go and watch it.
Go and watch it.
And that's why I was like, I must actually watch this movie.
Yeah.
But now you've sold me on it.
Yeah, I just think it's lovely because it actually works as a date night.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of moments in the twists and turns where I was like, oh no, this can't work as a date night. And then something would happen. I'd be like, oh my God, it makes a perfect date night movie.
Amazing.
Because you also ultimately got to, an important part of a cinema experience, I think, here's an interesting little nuance, is how the movie ends can determine whether or not it is a success in the cinema.
Yeah.
Here's my little nugget. Here's my take. Yeah. Is that if you do leave pumped and excited or hopeful, it stands a better chance of doing a good job in the cinema.
Yeah.
Because you'll tell people about it.
Yes.
You leave Anora hollow and empty inside. And so you do not go and tell your friends to go and watch it.
I told so many people to go watch Anora.
I mean, in the normie sense.
No, of course. But I do think, I mean, it's sort of similar to like pop music versus like sort of sad, soulful. Like, you know, like we do tend to tell people more about the things that make us feel good.
Yeah.
You know?
So yeah, Eternity.
Good sell.
In cinemas.
Yeah, I'm in.
You have to know the plot. And so there's been like a few times where I can just get away with a couple of adjectives as I point to the poster.
Yeah.
So like with Begonia, I can be like, it's fucked up, but it's playful.
Yes.
It's fun and looks amazing, but it's really weird in a very cool way. Like you can just give them that.
Yeah.
But with Eternity, I'm like, so she dies and then he goes. and then by the end of the explanation, the person's like, this is amazing.
Cool.
Because you kind of need the plot.
Yes.
But it's cool. But it is cool. All right. Can I tell you about the Hemsworth thing?
Yes.
Okay. So over on Disney Plus, because it is a National Geographic, that also has Darren Aronofsky somehow involved.
Okay.
We have a story about Chris Hemsworth. This is Thor. For those who need the dots joined.
Well, there are a lot of Hemsworths, so I think that's
this is fair. This is the blonde Thor Hemsworth. And it's a story about him and his dad.
Ooh.
This is a documentary. It's a short documentary. I think it's just over an hour. Ooh. So it almost plays out like a TV episode. His dad, who has recently been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And they bring in experts and they have this sort of expose on how when you have Alzheimer's in the beginning, what can really help slow down the spread of it is how you stimulate your brain and what you do to your brain to help lock in core memories or have your brain think about memories so that you can hold on to them better.
Okay.
We know we're doing quite a lot of this stuff, and there's a lot of these great shows. Like there's one about the Blue Zones, which is like, why do people live longer? Why are people happier? There's such an interesting exploration of that these days. And so if someone does have Alzheimer's, one of the worst things they can do is just sit in their apartment or sit at home and be lonely and not have friends and not do things. Yeah. The best thing you can do is be with people, go back on old memories, challenge your brain, do all sorts of things. So one of the best things they can do is Chris Hemsworth and his dad can go on this road trip across America, across Australia, to some childhood memories and their house of where they grew up. And together with Hemsworth and a budget of National Geographic, they actually got the permission to go in to the childhood home, and with set designers, they recreated very closely what that childhood home looked like.
That's amazing.
They put things up and they decorated it and they did it the same way so that they could unlock certain memories with the dad. The dad was fine, and so a lot of the film, the dad's with you and he's fine, but you could just see these little moments where it starts clicking, where he's like, you know, where's mom? Mom's coming, but it's like, mom's not joining on the trip yet. Where's she? Is she here? You know?
Sure.
So you do see a little bit of it real time in the movie, but it's just a loving film. It gives you a little bit of information about Alzheimer's. You know, there's something like 100 million new cases of Alzheimer's every year as someone sort of gets it.
Wow.
Yeah, and just what you can do to help, how you can be there, you know, this kind of fear of what's to come.
Yes.
It's cool. So it's heartwarming, but it's an easy enough watch. So yeah, Chris Hemsworth, and it's called A Road Trip to Remember, which is quite a
nice.
It's a nice little pun.
It is a nice tie into the topic.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's a nice, easy watch.
An excellent use of celebrity.
Yes.
Like really.
Exactly. Mm. No, and I just think that you can imagine everybody agreeing to it by someone going, you get to have this moment. You get to have this experience. Mm. You get to help by showing people and telling people and exposing, you know, how it works and what happens and how we could make it better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all around heartfelt and good.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
That's a good sell as well.
Yeah, thanks, man. Okay.
So many things to watch now.
So many. Yeah, same.
Should we lock up? Is there anything else that we're dying to talk about?
Oh, we wanted to talk Frankenstein and Stranger Things 5.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
It's all about you, Russell.
No, I'm sorry.
Joking.
Let's touch on Frankenstein because we have indulged on it, but I really want to hear your take.
Okay.
Sammo.
I am a massive Guillermo del Toro fan. I have great love for Pan's Labyrinth. I have a lot of love for the films before that, Devil's Backbone being my favorite.
Okay.
I haven't
seen that. Same.
Please watch it. But, you know, he's an amazing filmmaker with a specific affinity for telling stories about monsters, both human and otherwise. And I think what's incredible, specifically going with Pan's Labyrinth, because that's the one we'll have all seen, is that they are small films that make really sharp choices.
Okay.
And what I felt with Frankenstein was that it was like, it's like a problem of like having too many resources. It's like because we can do anything all the time, nothing is impressive. So the whole thing ended up feeling flat to me.
Sure. Interesting.
I love the set design. I mean, it's always nice to see that kind of work. But where there was CGI, it was really bad CGI. Mm.
People have spoken about that. Yeah, like especially the wolf scene.
Yeah. But I mean, even like sort of some of the towers collapsing in the sort of monster creation moment, they look like I could do that on Blender. Kind of
interesting.
But I think ultimately the thing that I love about Guillermo del Toro is that you engage emotionally and you are touched by the thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what he's always been able to do.
You know. I have never felt less engaged.
What? Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't tell you why. I mean, I think movies meet us at weird times in our lives and work for us sometimes and not other times.
Yes.
I do not know if 6 months from now I rewatch Frankenstein, I will reappraise it. But just on this viewing,
Yeah, no, that's a good way to contextualize it.
Because interesting.
I've said that often as an exhibitor, I go to exhibitor screenings and they're often at 9 in the morning.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's like, I'm not ready for the monkey.
Yeah.
You know, where like at 8 o'clock, you know, in a cinema full of people, I'd be like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
But I wasn't ready to watch someone be electrocuted in a swimming pool and their body parts like strewn apart at 9 in the morning.
Yeah.
No, but that's interesting. Yeah. My feelings were like it would have been cooler if he didn't quite Wolverine himself.
Yeah.
And like he actually, every scar stayed. I thought that would have been cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt he was maybe a little bit too pretty as an ugly monster.
Definitely. And I think in general, tonally, I love a gothic horror, but this was melodramatic in a way that upset me.
Okay.
No.
Well, the book is definitely sludgy, wading through lots of torment.
Yes.
He did try. Yeah, he was maybe being faithful, perhaps too faithful.
But the torment in the book is grounded. It feels real. This felt unreal.
Okay.
Interesting.
That's interesting because this perfectly describes my experience watching The Shape of Water.
Yeah.
Where I just watched that and I was just like, this is boring. Yeah. And I'd feel nothing for these characters.
Okay.
But then I felt the inverse with Frankenstein. I was walking into it not necessarily being a fan of recent Del Toro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially like Crimson Peak. And I didn't even watch Nightmare Alley.
Yeah.
So I was like very skeptical going in.
Yeah, maybe your expectations were just too high.
I think that's very fair.
Yeah. And I was like so emotionally affected by the art direction, the scale, and I thought like the dresses were beautiful.
I've had a few movies where I went in with too higher expectations.
Yeah.
Mickey 17 was one of those for me.
Me too.
Where, you know, I'd read the book, I'd spoken to the author, I wanted it to be incredible. It's like, it's Bong Joon-ho, it has to be amazing.
Yeah.
But it's like, you're kind of only going to be let down if you raise it too high.
Well, totally. I just had this with La La Land, right? A film I did not care for when it came out. Rewatched it this year. Went, this is really good.
Really?
I really like this
movie now.
Okay, cool,
because I didn't like La La Land when I watched it.
Rewatch it.
Okay.
Rewatch it, sans the hype, sans the Oscars.
Yes.
Yeah, sometimes you're caught in the awards buzz hurricane.
And absolutely.
I do think the sort of buzz around Frankenstein hurt my experience. It's part of why I was saying to you guys, I'm trying not to watch trailers. Because that buzz around a film, I think, hurts my experience sometimes.
Interesting.
I think it's cool that they finally got it right that Frankenstein is the monster.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's always the thing. I saw a whole bunch of memes of like, man gets a thrill out of telling people that Frankenstein was the real monster at parties.
the real monster after, that's a smart
Yeah, exactly. Because
smart way to put it.
I remember that I was watching it with this guy I'm hanging out with that I went to go watch Wicked with as well. And we were just like the whole time like, this guy's such a fucking cunt.
Yeah.
He is a terrible human being.
Yeah.
He's like sulking there in his giant castle in his beautiful robe being like, she doesn't love me.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, this guy sucks, man.
No, and if he just gave him a partner, that's all he wanted.
Yeah. Mm.
You understand that more in the book. You feel it more in the book, which is just like, if I just had someone like me.
Mm.
But then his whole thing was, you're going to make a whole race of demons. We don't know this. It's like, no, just promise not to have kids. And then he would have just left him alone.
Yeah.
And then they would have lived out in the woods and been fine.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The movie would have ended.
Yeah.
Funny. But speaking of huge hype, the most hyped TV show is coming to an end.
Oh.
And old Stranger Things. How are you feeling at this point?
So, I mean, like, it does feel very drawn out because it's been 2 years since season 4, I think.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I didn't rewatch coming into this one. I didn't, like, watch any recaps. I was just hoping that I was going to be cued as I was watching it because it's so hard to, like, draw on 4 seasons of like a 10-year journey of something that you've been watching so inconsistently. So it does have that problem for me where I'm just like, okay, cool, I kind of remember what happened here.
Yeah.
But there's a problem I have where I remember the fourth one ending with like basically the other world in the movie, in the series called The Upside Down, basically bleeds into the real world and you have this merging of the two worlds. And then we come into the series and it's kind of just like not there.
Yeah.
And the town's been quarantined, but you don't see any scars from these two worlds bleeding into each other. And I was a bit confused and I was like, I don't know what's going on. But the biggest problem with Stranger Things 4 for me is it's got this problem of adding characters. And then on top of that, what happens is your antagonism gets kind of neutered.
Okay.
Because you are not showing any effective consequences of the value at stake. So it's very much a cliche kind of show in terms of it's about life and death, right? So
yeah.
The threat of life, basically. The man versus the supernatural force. And you're going to die if you don't control it and we don't fix it. And then the main antagonist just never kills anybody, but they keep on adding characters. And then what happens is, like, you don't feel any repercussions of this antagonism. Okay. So no one's really dying. No one's, like, being hurt. There are, like, some characters that get hurt and die, but they're not the characters that matter, really.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And if someone's being paid above X, they're safe.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's such plot armor going on.
It's the opposite of Game of Thrones. And then
the whole time they're like, we have to stop Vecna. He's going to kill everyone. Like, Vecna's going to destroy the world. And you're like, is he, though? Like, this guy isn't very effective. Like, he hasn't really hurt anyone.
Who's that?
Vecna is the main antagonist of the series. The okay. person who's controlling the Upside Down and is part of this hive mind of creatures in the Upside Down that's now trying to get into the real world. I'm a bit confused on what the goal is, but like, it's still a very visually impressive show. But my gripe, I don't know if you've picked up on this, Sam, is when directors don't give actors something to do with their hands.
Oh.
And there are like four of them standing in a room and it feels like you're watching Anchorman where they just stand still and talk at each other. And then now what you have is like 20 main characters with various subplots.
Yep.
And they all have to go on different subplot lines together because you can't not involve some of them.
Yeah.
And then you have 5 to 6 people all doing the same thing in a scene. And you're just like, okay. Do all of these people need to be here? Do they all need to exist? Are you sure you couldn't have killed some of these people?
Yeah, it's interesting to hear about, and this is what I'm picking up from you, because I can be completely objective.
Yes.
Is it's almost like the show has become a victim of its own success.
Yes.
100%.
And it doesn't quite know how to tie it all together. And it's feeling a little Game of Thronesy, where it's like, we've said this is the last one. We've built this huge world. How do we wrap it up in a way that people care about?
Yes.
Because apparently, and this could be all just bullshit on the internet, but there's talk of the Game of Thrones folks redoing the last season.
I didn't hear that. I heard that the follow-on shows
are going to
redeem the last
season. They're going to try and redeem the last season in a particular way.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, George R. R. Martin just write the book.
Yeah,
just dude, write the book.
Just get
come on
it.
Buddy.
But I think this happens a lot with TV shows, and it speaks to
How I Met Your Mother is also a big one.
It's
like, how do we wrap this thing up?
Well, and that's the hardest. It's the hardest thing in any story is to end it, and to end it with meaning.
Yeah,
and that only gets infinitely harder when your story has gone on for 6 years, 10 years.
Mm-hmm. I just hope that old Vince Gilligan is. You know, he has to have figured out Pluribus. He has to have known
I'm sure he does.
Where this thing's going to go.
I mean, like the Duffer brothers said that they were always writing towards a goal.
Mm.
Like they always knew where they wanted the series to end in Stranger Things. So one does hope that there's a lucid through line
and
towards
the finale. And
they can
always just say that.
Yeah. I definitely
so that people believe them and then they turn around and they go, oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck.
I think the Lost writers said the same thing.
Yeah, they said they didn't know where it was going the whole time. And I loved where that ended up.
Yeah, it's cool. Okay.
Interesting.
But I'm like, we've watched the first 4 episodes. The final episode was 90 minutes long. So it was like a little
mini
movie.
How many are
we
going to get?
So we're going to get, I think, 2 movies now.
Okay.
There's like a Christmas release and a New Year's release.
Okay.
I think. I might have got that wrong.
But it sounds about right, yeah.
But then there's like 2 like feature-length episodes coming.
Oh.
The strange sort of social wasteland between Christmas and New Year's. that's always to me like a funny little time lost.
Yeah,
strange, especially
like
when I was a little kid. Yeah, it's like, what day is it? Is it a Monday? Is it a Tuesday? And it was always that odd thing because you have this huge hyped Christmas as a kid, and then we also always had a particular kind of family event for New Year's. We used to go to these family friends, and like, you got all this cool stuff for Christmas. You've got your New Year's party, like, and then you got like 5 days in between. We're like, what the fuck do I do on these days? It's always a weird one for me.
No jokes. Like, that's a great premise for a Stephen King-esque, Stranger Things-esque movie.
That could be cool.
It's like just kind of Stand By Me-ish. Like,
yes.
These kids, what do they do with themselves in a beach town?
Yeah.
You know?
That's awesome.
Oh. Lovely. All right, guys. Let's wrap up.
Sure.
So this is us closing up shop, where for those who don't want to hear about Wicked for Good spoilers or House of Dynamite spoilers, you can sign off and we will see you again next week.
Yeah, I'll see you then.
But for all of those who have seen it, who need to join us for a cigarette, please come outside and we'll have a chat there. All right. Goodbye.
Bye.
Cheerio.
All right, let's get into this. Let's get into this. No, the glaringly obvious thing for me,
okay,
in Wicked for Good,
yeah,
is the fact that it feels like this epic story between two people, right, that need to fight each other.
Yeah.
You got the Green Witch and you got the wizard, and it's all about fucking taking him down. Sure, Michelle Yeoh's character is more productive and perhaps more evil, but there needed to be this kind of meeting. There needed to be this fight. There needed to be a conquering. There needed
some
to be
kind of confrontation.
A big exposing. They give you the fucking huge nugget of, like, he's her dad. Like, yeah. Like, that's huge.
Yeah.
And then they do fucking nothing with
it.
And then, for all his power and all his control, somehow this convinces him, you should just disappear. And right. So he's like, okay, I'll go, bye.
And that's not necessarily a good or natural or logical consequence to the problem.
You got to defeat the bad guy. You got to pull his pants down in front of the world. That's because that was what you wanted to do.
The entire plot like does operate around a false narrative that's made for the public, right?
Yeah.
It's like that's the big part of Wicked 2.
Yeah.
Is where they've constructed an illusion for the public.
Yeah.
And like that is never... undone.
It's never
exposed to the public.
That was the whole point. That was her whole agenda. And she never got to give you that. And so that's why it's those little things that left me in the afternoon going, what did I do this morning? I watched Wicked for Good.
But then also the entire, like, linchpin, is that the right word, around the conflict?
Yeah.
Is the discrimination of animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, sorry, when you're going into Stranger Things and you're like, wait, what was the thing and who was the what again? So like, why did they want to silence the animals again?
Because they needed a common enemy to rally people against. That's what he said in the first movie. Like, people need an enemy to...
It's so weak.
It's so weak as fuck. And then when the animals are like leaving...
Because in part two,
movie,
you're like, wait, why do we not like the animals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, you forget. Because the linchpin was weak.
Yeah. And then you never see people really hating on animals. They're hating on the Wicked Witch of the West.
She's replaced the animals as a common enemy. I don't know why we need to bother with the animals anymore.
Yes.
We've literally got one.
And it's like little, cute little talking squirrels. Like, why do we hate them?
Yeah.
What's the issue? Sweet mama bears that talk. So it was like, that didn't make sense.
Yeah, and then they just come back into Oz and everyone's okay with them now. And like, I thought we had this entire really effective campaign.
The book that this was all based on is sitting in the Bioscope lobby, and it is a thick book.
It is.
So I think there is a lot more, and apparently it is, because I haven't read it, I'll admit that.
Apparently it's way more spicy.
It's way more political,
yeah,
and it's way more like depressing and hardcore. It's meant to be like an activist look, and I think they probably go into more detail of how, you know, the animals are, in a way, how, you know, young fucking Jewish kids are raised to think the Palestinians are less than.
Yes.
It's their indoctrination. I'm sure it unpacks a similar feeling.
Yes.
Mm-mm-mm.
How the one group can be less than the other.
Mm. It's also, we come back to the shoehorning of like, we've got this kind of very, very complicated look at like propaganda, at like complex politics, at like all of these things. But at the same time, the movie's like, well, we have that story, but we also got these two women that have really good chemistry and we kind of just want to do that.
Yes.
You know?
And I'm like, cool. Like, I'd watch that movie. You don't need the other stuff at a certain point. Like, just do what you're good at doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's the problem with the musical, because it wants to make comment on these things, but the strongest part of the musical is this relationship between these two women.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, and there was a lovely argument made by the guys on Pulp Kitchen, the other film podcast. And the one that makes a great comment, which is like, part one Like, that should be it. That should be the story. Yeah. There's no more. There's no reason for part two.
Nope.
She is ostracized. She's seen as the evil. And she says, you know what? Fuck you. I'm defying gravity. I'm okay with it. I am me.
Yeah.
That's it. That should be the arcs. That should be it.
That's fully a character arc. Yeah.
But that should be it. Mm. That should be the play. That should be the movie. That should be it.
Yeah.
We don't need part two because it has got such a weak ending.
Yeah.
Mm. And then they go off into the wasteland and it's like, what?
It's just like, okay, cool. So the guy's going to chill in the desert and bone a scarecrow. Good for you, Alphabet. Yeah.
It reminds
me. That's imagine a bit of a spoiler.
Imagine those kids, eh? Green straw.
it reminds me of what I think is maybe the single greatest Letterboxd review of part one.
Yeah,
which is it's David Ehrlich, who's a fantastic film critic. Yes. But he's like, I love how this 163-minute part one of a story opens with this is the whole story.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
I mean, I'm like, yeah, it should be the whole story. Yeah. This is the good part of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Shit. Yeah, so that part felt weak and
absolutely.
And so I originally thought he'd cocked up the telling of part two. And there's this lovable, amazing musical that he could have seen as the blueprint, and what did they do wrong? And then you start hearing and understanding from those who've seen the play, the second half is underwhelming. Yeah. So you're like, oh... It just shows you the power of that first half.
Yeah.
And it shows you the power significantly of that one song that has just made the whole thing happen.
That's why they had to call it Wicked for Good. For Good is the only good song remaining in the musical. Right. It's a reminder that there's still something good coming.
Exactly.
Wild.
And we're saving it for the end of the movie, so you have to watch the whole thing.
Pretty much.
And oh my God, like Elphaba, dude, are you sure you don't want to tell Glinda that you're alive? Are you positive? Because then Glinda's like crying with holding her hat. And then Elphaba's just chilling in a trapdoor underneath her, listening to her cry about her death.
Hey, cool.
You're just like, do we need to do this?
Doesn't she get the sense right at the end where she's like, I know you're out there?
Nah, it's she like says something super
along
loose.
The, she says something. No,
I think, I don't think it's that she's aware that she's alive at all. I think she's like grateful that she had this friendship and that kind of arc of her character opens up to the Grimoire.
Yeah. You see, I don't even remember how the ending happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then also, the Scarecrow totally, when they reveal what he looks like, what Fiera now looks like as the Scarecrow, everyone's like, that's Ryan Reynolds in Deadpool. Yeah.
Someone used the same like 3D mask in the After Effects program. Yeah. They're like, we've already got it. We've already got it mapped down.
Save some cash.
Speaking of endings.
House of Dynamite.
House of Dynamite.
Yeah.
You have this missile coming.
Okay.
You have this fucking countdown for 2 hours as you get seen this.
In
this
17 thing. Minute chunks.
In 17 minute chunks. It just keeps coming at you from a few different angles. Yeah. You have Idris Elba not sure how to react. And of course, very similar to old Dr. Strangelove, you've got these similar kind of characters, one of which is going like, we need to react.
Yeah.
There is someone is trying to fuck us up. We need to neutralize, you know, North Korea, Russia. We need to hit their bases now, before this thing even hits us.
Because they don't know where it came from.
Because they don't know where this missile's come from. Yep. We need to react. We need to do this. What is your protocol? And so Idris Elba is, you know, he came from some real little politician show off thing with his basketball thing, and now he's in the Beast. You know, the armored car, and then he's in a plane or a helicopter, and next to him is a dude that's got the protocol and the different options. Right. Are you going to take one? Are you going to take two? What are you going to decide on? What are you going to do? We don't know. And at one point, someone even gives a great little nugget, little foreshadowing nugget. Someone goes, it might not even detonate.
Yeah,
that can happen. You know, this thing can land and it might not even explode. You don't know whether the whole of Chicago and how many millions of people are going to die. You don't know what could happen. And then the movie ends.
Don't joke.
You never get the decision.
You never get the decision. You never get, you don't know whether it happens. You never get the explosion. And my normie, lovable wife went, what the fuck, man? Like, she was like, what a waste of 2 hours. Because it is literally... You know the expression, if the juice is worth the squeeze?
Yes.
It's not a drop of juice.
Oh, no.
So it's just squeeze. It's squeeze for 2 hours and there's no juice.
Like,
And I was frustrated as fuck. And I was like, what was the point of that fucking movie?
I know.
And then I thought, was the point of that movie just to get me anxious and frustrated? What was the fucking point of that movie?
I mean,
what was the point of the movie, Sam?
I can see from the movie that it wants its point to be like how fragile the systems are that keep us safe, but it completely undermines that messaging by you're literally like spending like the first two of the three acts going like, I'm sure they'll finish this in the third act. They're just waiting to give me the information. And then you get to the end and you go, fucking what is this? And you forget about all the interesting things it had to say.
Like surely I understand an open ending and the impact it can have. We've experienced this plenty of times.
I don't mind an open ending.
But like surely your central event problem needs to be resolved. It needs to have like some kind of resolution. If that's the point of the movie and you don't conclude that, you don't give it its own fulfillment.
And
then
you actually, funny now that I'm thinking about it and articulating a bit more with you, you do get this one little side nugget, which is that it might not explode.
Yeah.
So the most interesting answer could have been that.
Yeah.
Could have been, no, there actually was a missile. It fucking landed, but it didn't actually explode.
And maybe we've already fired at this, or it lands.
That's a good open ending.
You know what I mean? Like, but I think it's interesting to talk about open endings because there are great open endings that work.
Yeah.
And I can't think of any now, but I'm sure we've all seen them. Inception is a fantastic open ending. And the open ending literally makes you lean in and go like, oh, I'm more interested in this thing.
Yes.
This literally made me want to throw something at the TV.
Oh, no.
And I think that's, you know, like that's the thing is like, it's not that you have to resolve what happens, but you have to give me enough to like at least feed the little story like monster inside.
There had to be something more. It was like, you know, battling with a fish on a line.
Yeah.
And you're like, do you lose the fish? Do you get the fish? Someone literally just took the rod out of your hands and put you in a car and took you somewhere else. Yeah. you were like, what happened to the fish?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
100% that.
Or it was like,
oh my God.
Yeah.
It was almost as if we were sitting in a old school cinema where there were multiple reels and someone just forgot to put the last reel on.
100%.
Where you were like, that can't be the ending. It can't be the ending.
I think they sent out the wrong version of the movie.
And what's that?
I said, I think they sent out the wrong version of the movie. I think it's gone on too long now. They can't admit it. But someone exported the wrong file.
Oh, God.
And it wasn't even like a 3-2-1 directed by Catherine Bigelow. They didn't even give you that. They were just like, we're going into a bunker. You saw something in the sky. You saw like chemtrails, but that wasn't where they were.
Nope.
So you don't even know whether that could have been the missile coming in the sky. They just were going into a bunker and then it ended.
Yeah.
Fuck that noise.
This sounds so unappealing. It's kind of like, oh, it was a dream all along.
It is kind of like that.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it.
Damn, guys.
Smoke over.
Yeah.
All right, so for all of those who've stuck around this far, bless you. I hope you wonder whether you felt the same way. But yeah, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
For a lovely day.
Like a chat.
To chat. We were going to touch on it, but we haven't had the time, and it's not too important, but it's just to mention the fact that our 200th episode is coming.
Ooh. When?
We're on the cusp of it. It's in about 2 episodes' time.
Wow.
And so every year, around the end of the year, we do something called The Most Rented, which is us going around in a circle. Sam, you don't know about this, I don't think. So I must explain this to you. Yeah. So every year around December, one of the last episodes of the year, we've done this for about 2 or 3 years now. I forget how long we've been doing this. We do The Most Rented. We go around in a circle and we literally say, what were our favorite films and TV shows of 2025?
Amazing.
We also have some quirky and unique awards. I don't think there'll ever be winners. All we'll have is people who qualify for certain moments. So we don't want to give these nods to films in itself. This is a separate thing. So we go around and say our favorite films and TV shows one by one. But in amongst that, we will give out special mentions.
Okay.
And that's what they are. and they are to certain moments of a film or moments of a TV show. We've got Graham's Biggest Swing, which is like we'll go to a decision. We've got, what did I call it? Cole's Shriek Out Loud in the Cinema moment, which is like the scariest sort of moment. The best Hang Dong moment, which is the best exposing of male genitalia.
Fabs.
And we got to keep coming up with more. I want like a good five or six.
Okay.
Okay, so start thinking about what moments we could have, which I really appreciate. Okay, so we'll get into that, and that'll be the 200th episode, which I think
that's
will be
really
a nice
cool
thing to do. I thought about what that 200th episode could be, and I thought there's no better way to do it than with all of you guys. We'll try and get everyone together.
You could like record it in two different sessions, maybe.
We'll figure it out. We've got four channels on this recorder that we record on, but we can figure out how we can do it, even if it involves moving the mics.
Yes, in between.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. But it'll be nice to all be together.
Yeah.
And we just literally
that'll be very
count
cool
it all down. So yeah, lekker.
Lekker.
Thanks,
amazing
guys.
Thank
Thanks
you
for your time.
Thank you.
Okay.
Have a wonderful week.
You too.
You too.
A wonderful week to all.
And to all a good night.